At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Captain Phillips.
I'm the captain.
I am the captain.
Who's the captain now? Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with one of my best friends, Tim Miller, and very good friend, Sam Stein
very
of the Bulwark.
That's an upgrade. From colleague.
It started as acquaintance.
Colleague.
And we've gotten to colleague.
Yeah, I just feel like we're getting closer every day that goes by. So Sarah is out today. She is doing more work on her book, which I know pleases Tim a very great deal.
It's just unbelievable.
Why is it unbelievable?
People got mad at me. They thought there was some chatter on this in the comments in the Next Level a couple weeks ago. So I do just want to come clean. There's some people were upset because they thought that I was negging Sarah, that there was professional jealousy at play.
Not being supportive.
Because we were not being supportive because we were joking about how I didn't want to write the book. And the truth is, number one, me and Sarah love each other, and we demonstrate our love via playful teasing. So you don't have to worry about us. We go back a long way.
That's interesting. I demonstrate my love for people by giving them gifts.
I know. Well, so it's different. We're all built different. So, and she knew me when I wore fake glasses and was heterosexual. So, me and Sarah have been through some bumps. And the other thing is, I didn't want to write the book because it's fucking annoying to write books. And I knew, and we have a growing enterprise here that's very valuable to all of you, the listeners. And I wanted Sarah's total focus on that. And I wanted her to help. And what we have found is that she was able to somehow manage to steer the ship and help it grow with the help of Sam and JVL mostly. I just blab and write the book. And yet there are still moments where I think that my original point is validated, such as right now where we have to suffer Sam's company.
What? Stop. Check catching strays. Wait, you're not heterosexual?
Anymore,
sorry,
no longer.
Did I miss this?
No longer. Yeah, it was okay. A phase.
All right, we gotta move this show along. War. We are still at war. Okay, so this is last week, I think. Well, not the week. The week before we went live because we were afraid that everything would change between when we taped and when the show came out. This week, we're rolling the dice. We're actually taping on a Tuesday afternoon. The show won't come out for 3, maybe even 4 hours. So it's possible everything could change. It's possible we can have another big bit of insider trading. Who knows?
The commander of the 82nd Airborne is being sent over there with a lot of troops.
Yeah.
That's not nothing. They could do
that
something.
That is true. There are a couple things that could mean. We'll talk about that in a minute. I just want to do a little temperature check here on you guys. What is your sense of the direction that things are moving right now?
It's a good question. It depends on the moment, right? So here we are. It's 2:08 p.m. You look at the news reports from this morning, and you just kind of read into it, and you're like, okay, Trump clearly is looking for an off ramp. They're having some sort of back channel negotiations. He touched the stove. He wants to get away from this. And then you look at news that literally broke 2 minutes ago, which is, again, as Tim said, the commander of the 82nd Airborne Division is heading overseas. And you just don't know. I mean, I guess if past his prologue, Trump likes to ratchet things up he does this and then he tries to use it as a negotiating tool. But then at the same time, he's done this and he has then gone ahead with military action too. So it's really hard to tell, honestly. It's really hard to tell. I just don't know if I have a good answer into how I feel things are going. I will say this. It's very clear that the administration wildly misjudged what would happen, right? I mean, they are now several weeks into this, still searching for some sort of coherent plan and rationalization for what they're doing. And I feel like that itself is a huge indictment. And the long-term impacts are clear. Even if we were to get out tomorrow, the long-term impacts are very, very evident.
I'm just more apoplectic every day is what I guess I would say, JBL, about this. It's the stupidest thing that I've ever seen, I think. I can't believe that he has managed to not meet my expectations, which were below the earth, and that he managed to kind of burrow even further below them and do something that even I, who have like the most acute case of TDS in America, would look at it and be like, God, that's fucking stupider than I thought.
What were your low expectations?
I expected him to totally screw up the economy. I expected him to have like a ham-handed mass deportation campaign that, ended up, causing great harm to both American citizens and guests and immigrants. Right? I expected him to do stupid shit. Like maybe I couldn't have predicted that he'd think about invading Greenland, but like, could he do something dumb like that? Yeah. But like this fucking Middle East war about nothing he can't explain what it's for. It's like, we're degrading Iran ships. Like that's really the end goal right now. We're degrading their ships. Who cares how many ships Iran has? Like, I understand that MBS and BB both really care about that. I don't see why Donald Trump should care about that. I certainly don't think any of the American people care about that. And I was talking this with Bill yesterday. I met some guy on the weekend who's like really struggling with their finances, was asking me about this. And it's like, how do you explain to somebody who can't afford to fill up their tank that they can't afford to fill up their tank because we're degrading Iran's ships? Because for 47 years, Iran's proxies have gone after people in the Middle East. It's just like, it has nothing to do with us. It's extremely stupid. I have no idea why he hasn't just declared victory and turned around. It doesn't seem to me like he's toggling. It's like all the signs to me seem to be like he's escalating and is just trying to stall and buy time with the markets. I'm gobsmacked. And anytime I listen to somebody who gives like a defense of it, I become more and more incensed. Like Tom Tillis earlier this week, Tom Tillis is like the smart Republican, the normal one. He was giving this interview. What was that on Sunday? What, in the Sunday show? And I didn't get to watch it till yesterday afternoon. Because I saw a clip and I was like, no way. It was this bad in context. So I watched the whole thing. And Tom Tillis is basically like, we don't have a plan. We don't have an objective. We should come up with an objective. In the meantime, though, I support the mission. And I'm like, what mission? What do you support? Why do you support the mission? We don't have an objective. We don't have a plan. We're just going to bomb Iran.
I don't know what the mission is, but I support it.
Until they call uncle. We're going to call bomb Iran until they call uncle, I guess, is the mission right now. It's crazy. I find it just totally crazy.
I mean, so when you talk about everything is stupider than you could have imagined, even just as the most obvious, for instance, why are we talking about the Iranian Navy when what matters is their drone strike capability? Right. I mean, this is like, so does it matter if the Iranians have capital ships? No, it doesn't matter if they have capital ships. Doesn't matter if they have fast attack boats. I mean, not really. The most dangerous thing is the drones. They have demonstrated pretty sophisticated drone operations and the ability to strike at sea with drones. The drone range, I think it's 1,000 kilometers for the for their main drone. And
look at Ukraine as an example of this. Look at Ukraine. So Russia, you could imagine Russia. So in this analogy, Trump's Putin. So this shouldn't be that hard for people. Right. You could imagine Putin saying that, and he has said this, like, you know, Ukraine has been weakened to such a degree, you know, like we'll be able to, take back the Rhineland or whatever the fuck, you know, whatever.
Bomb them until they say uncle.
Yeah. Okay. And it's true. And I get, in a lot of ways, Ukraine has been weakened economically. You know, the political system is weakened somewhat, though Zelensky in power. What has it? Ukraine now has better drone capabilities and better capabilities on this front than they had before the war started.
Better than America.
Yeah, because they were forced into the situation where they had to defend themselves. So I'm not saying that the Iranians will demonstrate the same level of ingenuity and whatever commitment that the Ukrainian does. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But like, they probably will come out of this with like a better sense of actually what they can do to harm us, right? Like they know now that they can just throw a couple drones into the Strait of Hormuz, take out a couple oil tankers, and like they're emboldened, kind of.
I mean, Bill made this point with you yesterday. This has been a proof of concept for Iranian strategic defense for 47 years. Their strategic defense concept has been, well, worst comes to worst, we can close the strait and cause enormous amounts of economic pain for the entire world, but mostly for America, because they're so heavily reliant on oil. And nobody ever really knew if they could close the strait. Like, we did have a tanker war before. Like, you know, this has been an open question. Well, now they can, right? This is, they've demonstrated the proof of concept works. That increases their position.
No, I mean, yes, for now, yeah. But like, let's just kind of tease it out. What is Trump's pain threshold here? So could Iran control the straits if, for instance, we put in 10,000 U.S. troops? Obviously, Trump's not going to do it, right? But let's say we did. Or 20,000.
Maybe.
Could we take over the straits? I'm pretty sure we could, right? We would suffer casualties for sure. It would be bad politically but for Trump, for sure.
Would the private tankers go through? Sure, our ships could go through. The Navy, like, right? The U.S. military ships,
probably. I'm just saying.
Would tankers go through?
I'm not like as schooled in the military aspects of this as you guys are, but I have to imagine that we could, if we devoted whatever resources we could to the enterprise, that we could take over and run the straits. We're not going to do it because it would cause real harm, human harm, economic harm, political harm. That's the problem with what we've done, right? Is that Trump has gone in with no clear objective, and he has a ever-changing pain threshold here. So he's, you know, we're making all these plays, for instance, sending over, you know, troops to the region, the 82nd Airborne Division now. And it's not clear to me that he's ever intent on using these, nor do I want him to. But this is where I think the Iranians have really benefited, is that they essentially, I mean, early this week, called his bluff. They said, if you attack our power plants, we're going to attack desalination plants across the region. And Trump backed away. And I think for Iran, that's the victory, is that they can call his bluff and then turn around and say, look, we called his bluff.
I just want to put a point on this. So the Iranians' main drone is the Shahed, and that has a 2,000-kilometer range. If you take drop a pin in the Strait of Hormuz and then just like swing it on a compass to, we could not secure 2,000 kilometers in every direction.
From drone attacks
in the Strait. So 20,000 American troops would not solve that problem, right? You could solve some close-up problems, but it's a loitering munition. It's sort of a fire and forget.
Yeah, and again, these are private boats. I guess this is my point. Like, Sam, in the technical sense, like, could we technically do it? Probably. Like, so the ships could go through. Could we give it to with such a degree of confidence that if you're a company, then it's your ship and it's your tanker and it's your oil that you want to send it through and just kind of go, you know, Leroy Jenkins, we're going through the strait. We trust Pete Hegseth will protect us. We're going to go through and we're going to duck. I don't know. Maybe some of them will do that. But there would still be huge disruption. And like, this is the thing I don't get, like, where I'm and JV, I'm curious your take. I'm curious both of you guys' take on this, because me and Joe Weisenthal kind of had a heated agreement about this, where like I feel like the oil prices are under, or it's underpriced. Yeah, what the reality is. And Joe says basically it is underpriced with realities. If you're just talking about like discrete reality, like if you went to Oman right now and said, I would like a barrel, it's costing more than what it's going to cost on the market because of the disruption. Right. So, but there is a sense, there's the old tweet about how Donnie Trump will wriggle his way out of this one, you know, and I think that the people, the markets, political commentators, I think a lot of people just continue to look at Trump and say, hey, I don't want to be that guy that's saying the doors are closed, the walls are closing in on him. I don't want to look like an idiot. I don't want to bet against him because maybe he'll taco tomorrow. And that, you know, if you're a finance, you know, I don't want to put my money on the line to bet against him because maybe he'll, you know, turn it around. A lot of people have lost money betting against him. And so I think that there is a lot of people right now that are kind of hedging in their analysis of this because of Trump's past many successes, wriggling his way out of jams. And I just don't see it on this one. Maybe I just am feeling great. Like I'm taking crazy pills though. Maybe.
I guess it's really dependent on context, right? Like, I mean, there's been plenty of stories about airline industries, for instance, pricing a $170 barrel gas. I mean, they're not predicting that he's going to wiggle his way out of this. And then I think it's like kind of, how do I articulate this? I feel like your analysis just now underestimates the damage that's already been done in a way. Okay. Like our gas prices are astronomically higher than they were a month ago. Astronomically higher. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, crude, astronomically higher. The stock market significantly lower. I mean, we are being, I was talking about with Catherine Rampell about this. We are being propped up by the, like the tiniest of little stools by AI and five, seven companies, AI basically. Companies. Yeah. And it's like once one of those or two of those emerge victorious, which will happen, and then all the others kind of collapse, that is going to be catastrophic. And on top of that, there's these things called private capital markets or whatever the jargon she used. And she was just outlining it to me. I'm like, holy shit. Like, even in this optimistic analysis that you offer, things are not great. I mean, they're bad. And yeah, maybe they can get much, much worse. And we're hoping that it doesn't get there. But
some of us are hoping it doesn't get there.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we survived. It feels like we've gotten significantly worse.
At this point, I introduce a practical question. How do you get, even if Trump wanted a settlement, so let's pretend Trump wants to get out. How does he get there? So I read a big OSINT nerd this morning who made the very smart point that part of what got us to like the day one decapitation strike was the long negotiations that we were having, which were both a diplomatic negotiation that we were having with Iran, but also turned out to have been an intelligence gathering operation, trying to identify how to get to their leadership. So you've shown the Iranians that you will use negotiations as ways to kill their leadership. You need their leadership to get a negotiated settlement, because without leadership, there is nobody to negotiate with, right? There's nobody there to say, yes, we're going to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Yes, we're going to stop shipping. It becomes kind of hard to have, like, I'm just logistically, yeah. It becomes hard to have these conversations because you're making the Iranians run a whole bunch of different traps in order to have conversations with you, because they're worried that you're going to be using that not as good faith negotiations, but as a way to identify their leadership and come and kill them again.
I don't know my ass from my elbow when it comes to the internal machinations of, you know, the various factions inside, you know, the IRGC or the, you know, any like the Iranian internal politics, and don't want to pretend to. But just like as an observer of politics and how political machinations work and how people elbow for power. Like in this moment, there's like a power vacuum kind of in Iran, right? I mean, like they have an Ayatollah Junior, you know, but that seems shaky.
Supreme leader.
Yeah, they have a new supreme leader, but certainly if you're internally trying to figure out who has the power center, that feels a little shaky. They have the person who is the speaker of the parliament, who was a real estate guy that I guess some people were saying Trump was trying to talk to. Do you want, if you're in your situation, if you're
it's like Wyckoff.
Yeah, and that guy posts on X in English. Like, no, I'm not talking to Trump. Because like you have to imagine like the worst thing you could be right now is to have the people with the guns be thinking that you're the one who's doing back channel negotiations with Trump. Right. And so like I just even in turn like, even like trying to identify who is the person to negotiate with, like what is the deal we could get from them? Like I'm not saying that's impossible, but like all the stuff that became pretty challenging when you like killed the people that you had previously identified as the successors.
I think so ironically, if you're playing this out, you would have to probably produce a deal for the Iranians that is more lenient than the JCPOA under Obama. Cause you'd have to give them some sort of incentive to come to the
table.
That's
where this ends.
And the good news is you don't have to give them the pallets of cash in that deal because you already desanctioned.
You already did.
Yeah.
The $14 billion in oil relief sanctions we gave.
But you can say to voters in Pennsylvania that it's the best deal ever.
Yeah. So this is what I was just going to say, man. Trump benefits so much in ways that other politicians in America don't, which is that he can. And I mean, this is a great feature he has for his presidency. He can just present his voters with Obama on steroids deal for the Iranians and tell them it's a great deal and only he could cut it and MAGA would support it 95% across the board. That I don't think that gets you to a deal, but boy, like That definitely wasn't the case with Obama. I covered the JCPOA negotiations. I covered them. It was fucking hard, not just among Republicans who all universally hated it, among Democrats, because they had to have that thing voted on. Schumer hated it. Menendez, who was chairing the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, hated it.
Well, he was taking bribes at the time. So
yeah, it turned out financially he was incentivized to hate it. He was Turkey. Whatever.
Well, no, I don't think it was related to that. Still, I don't know if you can fully disentangle all the bribes. It's just true of Trump, too, by the way, who's being bribed right now. Yeah.
Trump has a good hand in that he can get his base on board this thing. It's the Iranians who logically would say, why would we negotiate with you? You're probably, you know, about to bomb us.
Yeah. Two thoughts on this. One, Phil Gordon, who I interviewed, is going to be on the show tomorrow, the Waller Pod. He was Harris's national security advisor and just basically laid out the same thing as you did, Sam. It's like that, like Democratic presidents, and they have to figure out how to change this in the future. Maybe they need a cult leader of their own or something, but like totally hamstrung, you know, and panicked about like their, you know, right wing criticism if they do one thing, left wing criticism if they do the other thing, establishment interest group criticism if they do another thing. And that was very limiting when I asked about why Biden didn't try to kind of reengage these negotiations, and he did a little bit, but like basically it was just like the hassle's too big. Like the hassle's too big is what they comes down to. My question though is to your other point about whether MAGA will stay with him. And this is where I want to come back to and get JVL your take on my, I don't know if it's an optimistic or pessimistic view that like things are way worse than they seem right now. Because that's pessimistic for the country, but I think it's optimistic as far as the political ramifications for Trump, because of everything we've been talking about and the fact that like the best case scenario economically is like where we're at now, which is real pain for people to experience. I don't think the 90% of the MAGA folks are going to stay with him. I really don't. It's hard to tell in the polls right now because, you know, there's a lag. And, you know, if you're filling up your tanks a little more expensive one time and you're a MAGA person, you know, you start to get your back up. You're like, oh, hey, you know, right, we got to go kill the mullahs. You know, I'm happy to do it. Right. You get your back up. Okay. August, you're trying to go on your family road trip and like you can't. Because fucking food is more expensive, gas is more expensive, and it's like the reason, again, is that we needed to bomb the Iran ships. I'm not saying he's going to go to zero, if the wheels are going to fall off, but I think that things are going to get a lot worse from where they are right now for people. And eventually that pain does matter. Like, eventually people will like suffer enough, right? No, there's no amount of consequences that people would suffer to say, I'm off the ship on this one. Pun intended.
I mean, we'll find out.
Like, won't we? Right. I think so.
Wait, again, what are we talking about? People are off the ship. I mean, yes, self-described MAGA folks, 90% of them are supportive of Iran, but that's just people who are self-described MAGA folks. I mean, how many people in those polls don't self-define as MAGA folks anymore because of what's happening? As we are sitting here, literally as we are sitting here, the Marquette University Law Poll, which is like the gold standard in Wisconsin, they put out a poll today. Trump's net approval rating is minus 14, which is, quote, the lowest net approval figure for him in both of his terms as president. I mean, these numbers are, who knows? They're catastrophic. They are
minus 14 doesn't sound all that bad. Like, what's the approved disapproved number on that?
Minus 14 is not bad in Wisconsin? Oh, come on. Come on.
Oh, Wisconsin. I'm sorry. I thought you were saying Wisconsin.
What is that? 42, 56 or something like that?
Yeah, in Wisconsin. It's the lowest they've ever recorded in both their terms. How is that not bad?
It's bad, but is it as bad as you'd expect given the reality of everything that's happening? And that's where I kind of, you know, it's impossible to know, right? You're in uncharted territory, so you don't know. But it does feel like it should be a little bit worse. It's weird to me that 42% of the people are like, yeah, I approve of this.
I think it's getting worse. I think it's getting worse. I guess my point. I guess the point that I keep coming back to is I believe that because I believe that the actual environment, the people cannot accurately see the environment around them. And if you are just right, like, and if you're just living your life in Green Bay and the only real damage you've had to your life right now is that you filled your gas tank up one or two times. It's been more expensive. Okay. Like some people, that's been enough for some people already, as Sam points out. If we're really going to put troops in there, and if it's true that like the price of oil right now is actually a little under market because people are just assuming that Trump's going to wriggle his way out of this one, and it actually is going to go up to 150 or 170, which I kind of think. And so if you think that, then you think, man, minus 14 is really bad because he's at minus 14 and shit is about to really hit the fan for him. Think about how low he can go.
Again, let me try this another way, if I may.
What? What's, are you not happy with that?
During the spring and summer of 2020, when a pandemic was raging in this country and race riots were happening in cities across the country, and 20 million people had lost their jobs in 1 month, and the stock market was taking a fucking beating. Yeah. His approval rating in Wisconsin never dipped this low. I just want to be clear about that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But that was the libs' fault. So the so here's the difference. China virus was the Chinese and the libs' fault. Okay. The libs were making them stay at home and not go to church, and it got snuck out of China. Maybe it was a bioweapon. Donald Trump bravely and heroically protected us from that. This isn't that.
Yes.
I really don't. I mean, are you going to be able to convince some people? Is Will Sommer going to find the group of people that really believe that, the Iranians were about to insert a bioweapon into the bloodstream of people in rural America? Maybe. But, I think that most people are going to look at this and be like, bro, you did this. You did this. What are you doing? Why did you do this? You told us you weren't going to do it, and you did it. Nothing happened. You told us you weren't going to do it. You bombed him anyway. Then you told him you had achieved unbelievable success, and he told us we didn't need to do it again. And then one day we woke up. I got home from my job. I pulled up my laptop, and AOL.com told me that we're going to war with Iran. And I'm like, why? I voted for Trump. He said we weren't going to go. He said we'd obliterated everything. And now my life is in shambles. The economy's in shambles. I don't know, man. I think that the China virus situation was an easier spin for him than this one. There's my rebuttal.
All right. Very quickly on troops. Do we think Park Island could? Okay. Do we think that the deployment here means that Park Island is happening? The other possibility is that actually it's possible they could be trying to go to Isfahan, which is where Iran has stashed underground their 440 kilos of enriched uranium, which it turns out is really important and wasn't totally obliterated. As some of us pointed out back when we were called anti-American and troop haters. So it's possible they could try to go and seize a facility and exfiltrate a bunch of enriched uranium. That's a thing they could do, maybe.
Why?
Look, as we're speaking here, again, we have to say this is 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday because things change every time. But Trump is speaking currently as we are recording here. And the signals, and again, the signals are just what they are. Like, it could change in any moment. But here's a quote, and you tell me how you read this. You tell me how you read this quote. This is Trump on Iran. Quote, I don't want to say in advance. Of course, he now says in advance, but they've agreed they will never have a nuclear weapon. They've agreed to that. That's a Trump quote. All right. To me, that's him being like, I got a deal, folks. I got a deal. Of course, the Iranians are like, we're not even talking to this guy, but that's just Trump saying that.
That has been the Iranian position for forever.
I know, but
the Iranian position for forever has been, this is purely for internal energy production purposes. We're not going to build a nuclear weapon. But
Donnie got a deal. Come on.
But this is why I think he can get out of this, right? If he can find somebody to make the deal with and he can give them enough sweeteners that, again, because Khamenei needs to be able to, in order to make it work on his end and not wind himself up dead, he needs to be able to show a real victory to the people who run the Revolutionary Guard. And he needs to get enough from Trump that they can all be like, yes, this is good for us.
That's why I loved when Trump proposed sharing control of the strait with the Ayatollah, where they would take a little bit of Bitcoin each.
Yeah, shout out to Lauren Windsor for the Ayatollah booth that they were going to put up there, the Trump Ayatollah booth. That was a good coinage. I just want to say about the troops, for the reason that I've been laying out this whole podcast, I feel my head is spun. I cannot put myself in his position for once. I do not understand what they're doing. Every second that goes by, I'm like, why hasn't he quit this? It's an obvious disaster. I think that in the end, it's already going to become such a catastrophic disaster that it is like he will almost certainly now, like there will be a faction running against him. Which, like, up until this war, I mean, like, even on Epstein, there were people that voted against him. But, like, even if he continued to cover up the Epstein files, if he had stayed the course that he was on a month ago, there probably was not going to be, like, an irrelevant, and there'll be some gadflies, but, like, a relevant anti-Trump America First faction challenging him. And I think that it is inevitable that will happen now, that there will be someone from the Joe Kent Tucker world that now, like, runs as an actual, you know, the only true Scotsman, America First man. And so, and anyway, I say all that to say, I think this is such a disaster. I cannot imagine he puts more troops in. But he keeps doing shit I can't imagine. So I don't know. I guess they'll probably put more troops in. Who the fuck knows? I don't know. MBS wants him to. BB wants him to. Hegseth wants to. Hegseth wants to.
BB wants him to. All right, we've got to take a pause here for a word from our first sponsor, Tim.
Hiring help shouldn't be a headache. It's not a headache for me because I'm examined all that work. Or a drain on your budget. Upwork makes it easy to hire specialized freelancers quickly so you can get the expertise you need now. Without weeks of recruiting or a full-time hire, Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across web and software development, data and analytics, marketing, business operations, and more. Upwork helps to grow your business by giving fast access to specialized talent across 125 categories. So you can fill skill gaps, launch projects faster, and scale up support or down without committing to a full-time headcount. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork. And with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. It's free to sign up, and posting a job is easy. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That is Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
All right, before we leave this this section of the show, Joe Kent has been off doing a little media tour. Ooh. Sat down with both Megyn Kelly and Mark Levin. Awkward.
The Mark Levin interview was very awkward.
I didn't see that one. What happened?
Okay, well, there's nothing to see. It was just on the radio show. And like, just putting aside the merits of the arguments each side was making, Mark Levin is past his prime. He just, like, at one point Joe Kent was talking too fast and Mark Levin was like, I need you to make your points more slowly, one at a time, so we can address them one at a time. And then he's like, I can't hear you. And then he has to interject, and the music comes in, and he puts on ads. He wasn't up for it. I mean, I think Mark Levin's show is mostly just him ranting into the microphone, and I just don't know that he was ready for a tete-a-tete. Joe Kent on that show and on all the other shows keeps doing Joe Kent things, which is like having some moments of lucidity about the problems with this war, like intermixed with like very strange conspiratorial thinking and just asking questions, comments about the Charlie Kirk murder, even though he was the head of counterintelligence.
We got to talk about that. Yeah. We got to talk about that.
Oh, the pickleball stuff. Did the pickleball stuff?
Not the pickleball stuff. No, oh, okay. No, it's not that. He basically is saying that he's seen intel that Tyler Robinson was not the assassin of Charlie Kirk or wasn't working alone. I mean, this has real, but it's crazy, yeah. But this is
a foreign country he throws out there, a foreign country.
This is not like some, but this is not some gadfly. This has real potential to fuck up the trial for the federal government. This is not like not a nobody. This is someone who had presumably access to intelligence. Like, what is he doing?
I mean, if you're the defense attorneys there,
what a gift.
You gotta be thinking.
What a gift.
I have maintained all along that we are in the funniest and also worst timeline. But the funniest thing that could possibly happen in this timeline would be for Candace to be right about all of this and for it actually to be like an Israeli and a French team of assassins who were behind.
That is not funny.
Like, it turns out that they were the ones who really, it really was some weird foreign op against Charlie.
Well, that's not true. That's not going to happen. That is not true. It didn't happen that way. Obviously. Him getting off, though,
that could happen.
And then the conspiracies proliferating, and then years down the line, you know, people talk about the Charlie Kirk murder, the way they talk about the moon landing. I mean, like that
Jimmy
almost
Hoffa,
seems,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That seems almost inevitable at this point. It's very strange. And then you have everybody, like, did you see the joke, the other Joe Kent Charlie Kirk thing where he said that about the last time he talked to Charlie? And it's getting religious. No. It sounds like some of the stories that you hear from like the saints talking about, you know, like an apparition of Mary appeared to me. Very accurate. Don't want to impugn anybody who said that an apparition of Mary appeared to them. But that
we
is,
weren't at Fatima, Tim.
We weren't. We weren't. And that does feel more likely than an apparition of Charlie Kirk appearing for a variety of reasons. But Charlie, Joe Kent said, like the last time he saw him, he like looked him in the eye and grabbed him by the shoulders and was like, you need to make sure they don't get us into the Iran war. And Joe, and he said, that is your job, Joe. And it's like, what? It's like, what? Like you have like random lizard people, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories are like the last thing Charlie Kirk said to you. And this was the guy Trump made the head of his counterterrorism unit.
And then 18 months later, a man is dead on a pickleball court.
Oh, God. Come on.
People die on pickleball courts all the time.
All the time.
I'm pickleball. The demographic.
I'm not overwhelmed by this one. I got to be honest.
Pickleball is the silent killer. Okay. let's talk a little bit about ICE. So we have, I guess, a conservative radio host joked that ICE should go to airports to help with TSA lines.
No, it was a caller into a conservative radio
host. It was a caller at a conservative. Yeah. Okay. And so that's now the policy of the United States. Two things I want to talk about here are Trump saying that no masks at the airports. That interests me. Tim, you and Bill talked about this a little bit. And the second thing is Bannon saying that this is a perfect test run for to see how we could use ICE in 2026.
I'll take the second one first. And I agree with Bannon. It's rare to say this. I do think it's a good test run for how they can use ICE at the midterms. I think what you'd end up seeing is like five dumbasses who were inspired by a Dean Cain segment on Newsmax standing around in tactical gear, like eating Krispy Kreme and looking at their phone, scrolling through, I don't know, white nationalist memes on TikTok and X, and people walking by them and voting. I think that's what would happen if they put the ICE people outside the voting booths.
And that's generous.
That's what I think would happen. Fingers crossed.
That's like the most platonic outcome.
Yeah, there's an ominous possibility, but I'm just telling you what I see in my crystal ball, which is just what we're seeing now. The ICE agents have been deployed. Did you see when the Tom Homan is like, they can work the exits. They're highly trained. They can work the exits to make sure nobody goes in an exit. And I was like, great, really?
There's always somebody, a CSA agent, sitting on a stool by the exit. You're leaving the secured area, and they're just there to make sure you don't walk backwards.
Yeah.
I guess these highly, it's a good thing we're paying these guys big signing bonuses, because otherwise you could never find somebody to do that work.
Don't shoot anybody while you sit on the stool.
That was my question. I don't think anyone's really properly answered this. Where are these ICE agents coming from? Were they just kind of sitting around in like a warehouse? And we were just like, hey, go to the airport. Like, where do they come from?
Well, in New Orleans, we got them because there were some leftovers. We had some leftovers that didn't get deployed to Minneapolis. And they've been kind of roaming the French Quarter. And we moved into the airport.
What have they been doing?
Well, they've been menacing people outside of quinceañeras, I think, for the most part.
I know that. I know. But like, do we have a strategic reserve that we're just tapping into? I just don't understand logistically how this is working.
We've hired a lot of people. ICE has hired a ton of people. I mean, they had an unbelievably large budget. A significant portion did go to cowboy hats and other, you know, kind of set design for Kristi Noem, but we also hired a lot of people.
We need a Department of Government Efficiency to really suss out this stuff. If only we had
that.
Hey, hit the mask.
Can we talk about the mask part?
Please.
Well, I mean, it's like one of these things where Trump kind of blurts out how he feels politically, right? It's like he knows that having masked agents terrorizing people at airports is obviously problematic. So it is kind of telling. I feel like Trump knows where things are going. I don't know if Stephen Miller cares or anything like that. But, you know, we've had enough leaks, strategic leaks to at this point tell us that, you know, like the earlier one was that they're going to move away from mass deportations. They don't want to do mass deportations anymore. And like, obviously firing Kristi Noem. So it's late. It's way too late, frankly, for him to get on the right side of this thing, but it is another indication that they know they fucked it up.
Guys, can I bring some breaking news to you?
Sure.
Yeah.
On Two Talks, Trump's talking right now. Trump's always talking.
Yeah.
On ICE. And the question about the deal, Katie Britt and Democrats working on a deal. He was asked, would you sign the deal to fund everything but ICE to get those TSA agents repaid? Trump, any deal Democrats make, I'm pretty much not happy with it.
Wow.
So how's he going to
do this then?
Don't know. I guess
by definition, a deal that the Democrats will vote for, I won't sign. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess they'll end the filibuster to try to jam through the Save America Act. And then on the negotiations, you're going to have to stick with me here because we're going to go on a journey.
Ooh, okay. I can't wait.
The leaders left. Left is an interesting word. The leaders left. The leaders are all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to. But we're actually talking to the right people. And they want to make a deal so badly. You have no idea how badly they want to make a deal. And we'll see what happens. That's the status of the negotiation.
Sorry, those are the Iran negotiations, the DHS funding negotiations.
Yeah, those are the Iran. It was both. I was giving you the update on both.
So we don't know who we're talking to, but we know they're the right people.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because a bunch of other leaders left.
Americans have fallen for this shit for a decade. Like, I don't know. Can I? Nobody wants to hear about COVID masks. But can we do 90 seconds on Trump and masks? I mean, I remember the mask wars. I don't know if you guys have blocked that out of your consciousness.
Oh, no, I remembered them. I was a fighter. I was a freedom fighter in the mask wars.
You were a face looker. And you were a conscientious face looker. You just think that it's important for you. And I was sort of in the middle, right? I was not one of those people saying, you know, I believe in, you know, we ought to always recognize the abstinence fallacy. Just because you don't wear a mask once doesn't mean that, like, it's not the end of the world, but B, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's useless to wear them and that there are certain settings, certain types of masks, right? If you could get your hands on a KN95 respirator, those are pretty good. There are certain situations in which they could be helpful, other situations in which they weren't. Nobody needs to lose their minds in a grocery store because somebody isn't wearing a mask. Like, it's just, okay, it's fine. But there was a moment when there was this pandemic raging through the country and it did wind up killing 1 million Americans. Mm. And the guy who was president then, like, refused to put a mask on and, like, made a big stink about, I don't think people should be wearing masks and whatnot. And that did result in some excess deaths. And he's against it. You're a pussy if you're wearing a mask in order to try to not get people sick around you. But if you're using it because you want to be able to shoot people and not get identified, that's great. Tough guy. He's a big fan of that.
You're a tough guy. Yeah, you're alpha.
Not
all respect for that.
It amazes me that gets tolerated by half the country. Half the country looks at that and is like, yeah, sign me up. Nothing. Nope. Nobody else wants to. Okay.
I think you said your piece.
All right. Our next sponsor is Shopify. Starting something new isn't just hard. It's terrifying. Believe me, we know. So much work goes into this thing that you're not entirely sure it will work out. And it can be hard to make that leap of faith. When we started this podcast, I wasn't even sure what I was doing. What if no one's listening? What if I make a fool of myself? What if nobody buys the products and services that I pitch? Now I know that I was right in believing in myself and launching this whole thing of ours, despite all the fears and hesitations. It also helps when you have a partner like Shopify on your side to help. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Skims and Momofuku to brands just getting started. Get started with your own design studio. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand's style. Accelerate your efficiency, whether you're uploading new products or trying to improve existing ones. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. It's time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/thenextlevel. Go to shopify.com/thenextlevel. That's shopify.com/thenextlevel.
Got a new update for you.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
From the president.
This makes me anxious when you keep saying this. Go ahead.
This is great news. I don't know why you should be anxious. The people of Iran gave us a gift.
Oh.
And the gift arrived today.
Oh.
It's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
I won't say what the gift was, but it showed me that we're talking to the right people. Wasn't related to nuclear matters, but to oil and gas. So, to sum up,
Sorry,
the leaders
that's a real
left.
Quote.
Yeah.
We should have done this show live.
Sum it up. The leaders left. We don't know who the leaders are. But we're talking to some people.
They gave a gift.
They gave a gift. Yeah. That made us think we're talking to the right people. The gift was something that was valuable. It was not nuclear, but it was related to oil and gas. And here
we
are.
What do you think it is?
Is it a plane? Is it a gold bullion apple? Is it a peace prize? Is it larger than a bread box?
We did not need any oil and gas related gifts from the Iranians until we started the stupid war that closed the Strait of Hormuz. This is like a fundamental, this is where, you know, I'll start to lose my mind if the people of Pennsylvania end up buying one of these deals, which is like gas prices were
low. They're going to.
Everything was fine. We had energy independence. The Iranians were no threat to the Americans. And so we started a war, we created a crisis, and now the people that we started a war with apparently are giving us a gift to somewhat alleviate the crisis.
You know what I've noticed, and I don't know if you guys have picked this up, it actually ties what JVL was saying about masks a little bit. He's talking about the Iran war in kind of the same way he talked or has talked about the COVID pandemic, like this like little blip that he had no responsibility for. Everything was going great, and then we had to deal with this little thing, and we're going to make it great again. Don't worry. And it's just like, it's given me these very intense flashbacks to him talking about COVID. And I do wonder if the people of Pennsylvania, to your point, are going to look when oil comes back down and suddenly gas is only $3.50 a gallon. And like, man, he's given us so much relief from when it was close to four. And it's like, no.
Yes, that's what's going to happen.
No.
So I wrote a piece
not
today,
let that
Sam.
Happen.
I can't imagine if you've read it.
I will be an individual person going gas station to gas station in rural Louisiana with a picture showing people in MAGA hats the picture of what it cost before.
That's not how it works. He sets their house on fire and then it burns for a year. And then he comes and he puts the fire out and says, hey, you want to give me a medal? I put that fire out for you. And people say yes.
Sure. But here's another thing, and I'm not trying to be overly critical, but the opposition here is kind of weak, right? You all remember the stickers all over the gas stations of Biden pointing to the price. Have you seen one Trump sticker on any gas? I haven't seen a single thing.
It's just starting, baby.
It's just starting.
It's just starting. We'll see.
I don't endorse vandalism of public property.
That's not vandalism. It's speech.
All right. We'll get to my full joker in a minute. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, there was a piece in Politico, maybe you guys don't care about this. There was a piece in Politico about conservative think tanks.
Hmm.
And this is my sweet spot. This is what I grew up in conservative think tank world. I was never really a Republican, but I did hang around like the American Enterprise Institute all the time. My office was in the same building as theirs. So this was about the new MAGA think tanks and they're jockeying with the old conservative think tanks like Heritage and how they're all getting ready for the post-Trump future. One of them bought a $20 million building, one of the new MAGA think tanks, like two blocks from the White House. That's great. I found the entire thing fascinating.
Isn't MAGA think tank kind of a misnomer?
That's why. And so because what we have is we have this universe of people like Orrin Cass and the guys at Claremont who saw Trump come in and decided, I can build an ideological framework around this. And 10 years in, they're still trying to do that, even though Trumpism is whatever Trump says it is at any moment. And, like, you know, he creates the entire universe anew with his whims. And yet they're still all running around trying to act as though there's a coherent ideology in here somewhere. If only you could really tease it out. And I don't know, like, Tim, I don't know how close you were with conservative think tank world. And Sam, you must have seen it all from the outside. So it must be weird to you.
I saw from the outside. Yeah.
Here's what explains this to me. I can explain this for you. Because I was never like inside the think tank world because I'm not a Poindexter, you know, but occasionally
much too cool.
I'd be at meetings with them and such and understand how it works. You know who's funding this stuff? Yeah, it's some big MAGA donors that like want to feel fancy and smell their farts and like, you know, show off to their friends that they can get, you know, Susie Wiles or Russ Vogt to show up to their house or their conference or whatever. Like there's, so there's some of that right happening. Here's the other thing though. Because MAGA has like, say no core is wrong, but because there isn't really a coherent policy worldview around MAGA, you know, except for in a few instances, it leaves this huge opening for groups like this to be bought off, right? And so you have the crypto people, you have the AI people, other, you know, more social media tech folks, you've got the natural gas people, hell, you've got the wind people probably pay these guys, right? Because they want to, you know, get a white paper put out from the America First Institute that's like, wind is really America first. It's the only thing we're making here, right? Like every fucking industry around the sun pays these people. And it's not impossible, but it's harder to pay off think tanks that have a coherent ideology because, you know, they're not going to just totally switch their view on something unless you're really signing a big check, you know, but these guys, like, they can't be against immigration deportations, right? Like now they can be on any side of the war. You know, they can, yeah. they have to be at least kind of pro tariffs, right? But like besides that, it's like it's a blank slate, baby. You can pay Kevin Roberts is like, go pay me, you know, big tech guy. I'll be for AI, I'll be against AI, I'll be pro crypto, whatever you whoever's writing the biggest check.
Look, I'll just say this. I mean, I think my vantage point, I have not been involved in this. I have reported a little bit on it. I've observed it. The same problem does, to a much lesser degree, I think, exist on the left. Like, there's been some issues back in the day, for instance, around tech and how close some of these think tanks were to this, you know, for instance, Facebook, now Meta, and other places. And then on Israel, too. This was a big thing in the left, where it's like some of these think tanks had just problems around donors who were very pro-Israeli and people were internally at the think tanks wondering if that was affecting their policy output. But to me, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, it does seem like it's more pervasive on the right. And it's not just think tanks, it's conservative press too. I mean, we just published last night this Will Sommer piece about this ridiculous payola scandal where it's just like these conservative outlets for $500, like really cheap money, were just putting ghostwritten articles on their publications being like, this Jack Abramoff crypto firm is like getting an unfair deal from the NFL. And it's like, everyone is on the take. Everyone is on the take, but it's not them. It's not just the lowest editor at a publication or a think tank. It's the administration. I mean, like so much of what this administration does is just basically, oh, you gave enough money to my political action committee. I will give you this favor. That's it. It's just on the take. And, I've been actually shocked by it. And I do think where I'm trying to get Summer to write a piece on this too. I do think this is kind of a soft belly vulnerability for Trump because you do see it every now and then where people on the right are like, man, it's way more corrupt than I thought. Like this pardon stuff is very corrupt. Some of the stuff happening here is grifty as hell. And I do think people are kind of grossed out by it.
On the other hand,
okay,
I think you could make the argument that Project 2025 was one of the most successful think tank led policy initiatives ever.
Ever? Yeah, 100%. I wouldn't disagree with that.
I'd say analyzing how that happened then becomes kind of interesting because what Project 2025 was largely it was a vetting operation for apparatchiks, right? And the actual goals for what you wanted to do were secondary. The first thing it was we can vet a whole bunch of people because the executive branch needs bodies. And we will just turn into, we'll spend 4 years vetting bodies so that we can shove a list of resumes under the front door the minute Trump gets elected. And that's different. That's something like parties used to do, you know, and the parties can't really do that anymore. Not at, or maybe they don't want to, I don't know. But Heritage was able to do that. And Heritage, and that is interesting to me. It's like, that's what Kevin Roberts understands that Orrin Cass doesn't. Like Orrin Cass thinks he's like there to, you know, I'll make good faith arguments about policies that will be pro-union and pro-worker. I'm sorry, get the fuck out of here.
I want to quibble with the Project 2025 being the most successful Please. Project ever. Because, and this probably, we're just spitballing here. We're at the end of the Next Level podcast. Sure. This probably requires a little bit more studiousness to for me to come down with a very informed opinion. But Doge ends up being a total disaster.
Well, and from whose perspective? Well,
hold on one sec. Yeah. From what vantage point?
Like, if the vantage point is, like, they wanted to kneecap the administrative state, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was the whole point of this, right? Like, they wanted to defang the administrative state and politicize it, right? And they managed to kill USAID, which was, like, not the top thing on the list. The lawyers in the administrative state have so far pretty successfully pushed back on them through the courts. And a lot of pain has been caused. They've not done anything to rein in spending. And I don't think they've done a ton to limit the ability of a future Democratic administration to start using the administrative state again. I mean, like, they've got some people now embedded in there. They're an issue. There are going to be issues, right? No doubt. But did they do any structural change there? Another big part of what Project 2025 was like putting people like Joe Kent inside the deep state to defang the deep state. And that didn't seem to work. The deep state seemed to win. And, you know, whatever you want to explain what's happening in the Iran war, it's not the Tulsi and Joe Kent people that have won. The election stuff, they haven't figured out quite yet. Anyway, I guess maybe I would say that the jury's still out on the on whether there is sustainable success from that.
Sustainable. I'll give you the sustainable success. I think, you know, when you're cutting federal jobs and changing regulations, like, inherently, if you believe in executive power to that degree, then next Democratic president can do the exact same thing and add jobs and reverse the regulations. I just think that as just a wrecking ball enterprise, not a deficit reduction enterprise, Doge was remarkably successful. If you had to guess what percentage of the federal workforce left or was fired in the past year, what would you guess?
15%.
Well, you overestimated. It's 11%. That's 315,000 federal employees gone. Any environmental regulation that was ever on the books, basically gone. All the worker protection regulations, basically gone. CFPB is only hanging on because of some judicial interventions.
Yeah.
Education department's completely undone. I mean, like, if you look at the granular level, it is a remarkably damaging administration with respect to the federal bureaucracy. Now, in the high picture stuff like the deep state and prosecuting your political opponents, no, they haven't gotten there. But I'm not sure that was ever Doge's sort of value proposition. I think they were there to just wreck the government.
Yeah, the saving the money was the pretext. In the same way right. that, like, free speech maximalism is always the pretext for these fuckers.
Yes, yeah.
All right, now word from our friends at Boll & Branch. Sheets don't usually fail all at once. It's the small things, the corners that won't stay put, the fabric that starts feeling thinner and scratchier than it used to. You wake up warmer or more uncomfortable than you should. You don't always realize how bad your sheets have gotten until you finally replace them. If your sheets are pilling or thinning or slipping or overheating, that's your sign that it's time to upgrade to Boll & Branch. Boll & Branch's signature sheets are made of 100% organic cotton and designed to hold their shape, stay breathable, and feel luxuriously soft night after night. You'll fall asleep faster, you'll stay comfortable all night, and actually notice the difference the moment you get into bed. They don't wear out. They get softer with every wash. We get dark on this podcast sometimes. Stay tuned for about another 30 seconds because we have to cover news every week that can be truly sad and disturbing. There are enough things in the world that can keep you from getting a good night's sleep. Your sheets should not be one of them. And for me, with Boll & Branch, they never are. God, I do really love the Boll & Branch stuff. They're amazing. Upgrade your sleep during Boll & Branch's annual spring event. Take off 20% site-wide plus free shipping at bollandbranch.com/next level with code next level. That's Boll & Branch, bollandbranch.com/next level, code next level to unlock 20% off. Exclusions apply. See site for details. All right. I just want to do a quick, we're going to talk about Greg Bivino. We'll close out with Greg Bivino. Just very quick, couple cleanups from Texas. Were you guys surprised that the Tallarico interview went as far and wide as it is? Made a lot of news, Tim. You know, I'm not surprised because you're a master interviewer. But
I think there's a lot of interest in that race. He's very interesting. I think that the right-wing media is very keen on crushing him. I think that I was impressed by Tallarico, and he's better than my expectations. I think we talked about this last week on the live show. I also think that, like, you know, some of the things that I asked him about that got a lot of news in right-wing media are things that he was, like, saying and doing during peak woke that are polarizing. And he was going to have to think about how to talk about them at some point. And I just happened to be the one that was there and, you know, was able to do it in a cheeky enough way that he was able to kind of explain his views. I think that his theory of the case now makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the fact that he has an actual idea for what his message is for winning over Trump voters is a good start. And I asked him this literal question, like, will those cultural cleavage points, though, be so great that it doesn't matter? They can't hear him because all they heard is all the other all the other stuff that he posted. You know, does he has six genders or whatever, meet, you know, all those things. And so, you know, he had to talk about those. We talked about them. I thought I was impressed. I'm not surprised that the Breitbart was not impressed. But, you know, I think going forward, one of the things, like, if you ask me to kind of like rank which of the states were best suited for Democrats to win in November of the stretch states, like, I would have said like Alaska and maybe Nebraska over Texas, in part because like the candidates are a little more low profile for those states, right? Like, it's a little tough. And in Texas, like, you have this tough balance that we saw with Beto of, like, you got to be able to do both. You got to, like, persuade some people and juice turnout. And that's a challenging thing. Like, doing one or the other is a little easier. So anyway, that's kind of my feeling on it.
Sam, did you have thoughts?
Well, it's like, like Tim, I'm sort of curious how you balance those two needs, right? I mean, I think the Beto experience and how Tallarico looks back at it is going to be really interesting. Because my recollection of Beto was, you know, he was just, you know, constantly live streaming and doing things and then not unapologetically grasping onto sort of very progressive policies like gun control in Texas, which in retrospect probably was not the smartest idea.
That was more the second time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, either way, he was being unapologetically progressive about these things. I think he was like pro-kneeling, like Colin Kaepernick, if I'm remembering correctly, is the support of that. I think Tallarico, and this is gets back to, in a way, to the sort of the group's answer and things like that. Tallarico understands that there's got to be more nuance there. That's clear to me just watching him and watching the interview. He's not going to, you know, go, you know, absolutely balls to the wall. And maybe that will cost him a few million dollars and raise money. And maybe it will cost him a little bit in turnout. But I happen to think that Democrats are so desperate at this point and so anxious about the state of the country, that there is a real appetite and a sort of sophisticated understanding, a more sophisticated understanding about some of the compromises, intellectual compromises that the candidates will have to make.
Yeah.
And that they're going to be willing to just say, sure, whatever, like, just win. And I don't know if that gets Tallarico over the hump. It's so hard. It's such a big state. So much money has to be spent in so many different media environments. It's really, really expensive and hard. And I continue to think the other states are better. But, you know, I wouldn't totally rule it out either.
Just win, baby, Al Davis. I do think there's a lot of demand
for that. Is that Al Davis or Barry Switzer?
Al Davis.
It's Al Davis.
Okay. It was Al Davis. Okay. Yeah. Right. I just want to make sure.
All right. You know, I was going to say something about the people who are angry with me for being gleeful about consequences and stove touching. But I don't know. Did either of you read a newsletter that I put out today?
Not yet.
Timmy, I can always count on you, Tim.
Well, I got very excited about it. And I saw the headline. I smiled and I said to myself, I'm going to like save this to really savor it this evening at the end of the day. Like, it just came out a little close to the taping rather than kind of rush through it. So I want to savor it. So why don't we just, I think everyone should savor it with me and we should just experience that together in reading and then we'll talk about it next week.
All right. So Greg Bovino sat down with the New York Times for a very long, very glossy America's Top Nazi profile. And it is crazy for lots of reasons. I just want to just read out two little things for you guys to react to. Previously unreported legal documents show that Mr. Bovino also admitted he had referred to undocumented people as, quote, scum, trash, and filth while giving a speech to his agents. He said at that time he had been referring to criminals such as child rapists, but also he refused to back down. All illegal aliens are criminals. So the tautology here being like, oh, I was only talking about criminals, but of course, all of these people are criminals. So therefore, they are all scum, trash, filth.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Mr. Bovino said he had a master plan that was in motion before his exile back to El Centro. It would have neutralized protesters, he said, and made it possible to deport 100 million people. That is a goal that the Department of Homeland Security has widely promoted. 100 million people is
a third of the country,
a third of America. We believe there might be as many as 20 million undocumented people in America. He would like to deport five. He had a plan to deport 5x that. I don't know what you guys think of this. Part of me was a little bothered that the New York Times was willing to give him the glossy treatment.
Was it glossy? Can we pull this up on the screen? Let's pull this up on the screen.
There's some photos.
A picture of him in the woods. He's looking like a lesbian, Colonel Stephen Lockjaw, looking off into the distance.
Even if you say, look,
in this photo.
If you want to say it's glossy, I still think it's fine. If there's a distinction between giving glossy treatment to like a Richard Spencer, right? Who is, you know, I remember this was a big controversy. It's like, why give that guy glossy treatment? He's just a Nazi. But Greg Bovino was the most powerful immigration official in the country for a period of time. I mean, he's significant.
Yeah.
I want to know what
he was going through. But it treats him as a normal political figure.
I mean, whether or not he's normal, he was official and he was powerful and he had, and I think there's a real value add to knowing how distorted his worldview was and the type of thoughts that went into the shit he did. I mean, there are some quotes in here that like you kind of sit back and you're like, I can't believe this man.
Yeah. I just feel like the piece should have been more adversarial.
Sure. Okay.
I'm not saying like don't run the piece.
Right.
But the piece reads the same as I would expect any piece about anybody who has ever been head of any federal agency ever.
Like any other lesbian. Like it could have been Janet Napolitano, for example. Or it could have been.
No, you know,
Greg
like this
Bovino.
Could be Janet Reno. It could be Greg Bovino. It could be the head of the FDA. Yeah, it could be the head of the National Park Service. Like that's the tone of the piece.
I hear you. It's just that's pretty far down my list of complaints.
Yeah, they have the setting. They're like sitting down for eggs and bacon and hanging out at the bar and walking in the woods.
Yeah, he comes off horrible. I don't know. I find him to be utterly appalling in every way. And I think, I don't know. I also think it's pretty revealing and newsworthy that like he said what a lot of the private reporting said, which was that he was hardline and the rest of these guys were pansies, that Tom Homan wasn't willing to go there. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Guys, good show. Incredibly long show. We'll be back next week. Hit like, hit subscribe, follow the channel. Good luck, America.
Bye. Thanks, Sam.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.